Welcome, everybody, and thanks for joining me Beyond the Divide, where we cut through the noise to uncover the truth that no matter our differences, we're all just people. We're united in a pursuit of a better tomorrow. We're going to challenge the divide. We're going to celebrate our shared humanity, and we're going to build a future for ourselves, our families, and our nation. The youth of today are so bombarded with the dangers of social media. If you're a teen, you're scrolling through endless feeds, or you're a parent who's worried about your kids' screen time, this episode is for you. And I want you to understand first and foremost that God made you perfect just the way you are, and you don't need to chase illusions or hide your so-called imperfections. It's 2025, and the average teen spends over 7 hours a day on social media. Be it TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat. And these aren't just apps. They are designed for a purpose, and that purpose is to keep you hooked with algorithms that feed you content that's tailored to your interests, your fears, and your insecurities. But here's where it gets really dangerous. These apps create something called an echo chamber. And an echo chamber is like being in a room where every voice is bouncing off the wall back at you with the same message over and over and over, louder and louder. And for the youth of today, that message is more often than not that you're not good enough. And if you think about it, the endless posts of perfect bodies and flawless skin and luxurious lifestyles, viral success. If you're into fitness, you're bombarded with influencers who have perfect bodies. And if you're into fashion, you are bombarded with the latest trends, all the cute clothes, everything that you need this season, this fashion statement, whatever it is, the color of the year. And the algorithms serve up content that amplifies feelings of depression, comparison, anxiety, and they do it on purpose. Studies show that this is leading to skyrocketing rates of anxiety and depression and low self-esteem, especially among teens. One report from the American Psychological Association found that heavy social media use correlates with a 27% increase in depression. 27% just because you're looking at Facebook. The echo chambers distort reality, and they tell you that everyone else is living their best life while you're falling short. But it's all curated, it's filtered, it's edited, and more often than not, it's fake. And that perfect vacation photo probably took 50 tries and a lot of Photoshop. And the influencer's authentic story is sponsored and scripted. Youth of today are growing up in this pressure cooker. And they are feeling like they need to measure up or they're going to fade away. And it's not just about likes, it's about your identity. And that's where the real harm with social media lies. It attacks the very core of who you believe yourself to be. Now, if you're listening and you're nodding along, know that you are not alone, but there's a way out, and it starts with recognizing the illusion. Imagine logging in and you're seeing post after post that's saying you need to be thinner, you need to be smarter, richer, more outgoing, you need these jogging shoes so that you can start exercising, or whatever it is, you need this spray tan so you can go to Hawaii on this perfect vacation. And for girls, it's usually beauty related. You see airbrushed models with impossible proportions. For boys, it's the grind culture where if you don't hustle harder, you're weak. And for everybody else, It's the not-so-subtle push to conform. Change your style, change your opinions, sometimes even your values to fit in with the crowd and what's going on. And these echo chambers are not accidental. The algorithms of social media learn what keeps you engaged, and negativity always sells. Negativity gets clicks. Clicks get money. A study from Pew Research revealed that 81% of teens feel pressure to only show the positive sides of their lives online, which creates a vicious cycle where everybody is hiding their struggles and making you feel like the only one who's imperfect. And it's not just the consumer. Think about, you know, when your teen is being influenced to only show that straight A. And so for them, if they don't have a straight A to show, then their worth, their feeling of self-worth is diminishing. The dangers are going beyond mental health. It's affecting relationships. It disrupts your sleep cycle. It impacts your school performance. And with risky behaviors like the newest TikTok challenge, it's becoming dangerous. But there's a pivot. This is not how it has to be. Amid all the noise, let's turn to the ultimate source of truth, God's Word. In Psalm 139:14, it says, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. God made you perfect, not in the world's filtered sense, but in His divine design. The way that you are is exactly who you were meant to be. And He loves you. And your parents love you, and everyone around you loves you for who you are, because that is who you were meant to be. Your quirks, your strengths, the things that you think are flaws, someone else loves those about you. I hate my hands. I hate my wide shoulders. I have a nose with a crazy bump in it, like hippie ski slope nose. But my husband tells me all the time that those are things that he loves about me. So they are all part. Every single little thing that you hate about yourself is part of God's masterpiece and His flawless design. You don't need to change yourself to fit somebody else's mold, and you don't need to hide your imperfections. Embrace them as part of your uniqueness. That freckle, that laugh, the passion that you have for art over sports, God did that and wired you that way on purpose. And you definitely don't need to keep up with the false illusion of social media. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's a temporary distraction from eternal truths. In Proverbs 31, it reminds us that charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. And the same goes for everyone. True value comes from within your heart and your soul and your faith. Just be yourself, have faith in God, and know that everything will work out just the way it was meant to be. In Romans 8, we're promised that we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. And that includes your online struggles. Step away from the mindless scrolling, seek out real connections, and trust in God's plan for you. I want to quickly tell you guys the story of Ruth. Ruth can be found in the Old Testament. She's one of only two women that have a book in the Old Testament named for them. And she was born around about 1000 BC. And she was born a Moabite. And when she was a little girl, she was among several other girls who were chosen to be a sacrifice to one of their gods. And so basically, they powder them all up, they make them beautiful, and then they throw them into a burning pit. And so, as Ruth is in line to step forward to be sacrificed, suddenly a blemish appears on her arm. It's like a giant birthmark. Like, imagine the biggest, brownest birthmark you can have. And it appears on her arm. And when the priests saw this blemish, they decided that she was unclean and she was unfit to be a sacrifice. And Ruth was pretty devastated. Like, this was a big, important thing. And, you know, part of the faith that they had, they believed in many gods. And so to be told that you're not fit to be sacrificed is kind of a big deal, which seems really strange. Why would you want to be sacrificed? But that was a huge honor. And suddenly Ruth could no longer be sacrificed. So she was turned away. And as a result, her life was spared. And Ruth grew into a beautiful young woman. And she caught the eye of one of the sons of Naomi. Naomi was a widow who moved from Bethlehem to Moab during a time of great famine. And at the time that they moved, her husband was still alive, but he died shortly after. And so she raised two of her sons into adulthood in Moab, and they married Moabite women. And shortly after Ruth's marriage to one of Naomi's sons, tragedy struck, and Ruth's husband was killed. So now Ruth is also a widow. And Naomi's other son was also killed. So here we have a heartbroken Naomi. And she's telling her daughters-in-law that they need to stay in Moab. And she's going to go back to Bethlehem because Bethlehem was where she was born. And the famine is now over. So she wants to go back to the land of her fathers. And she's telling her daughters-in-law to stay in Moab because it's their homeland. And they'll be able to remarry and rebuild their lives if they stay there. And so one of the daughters-in-law decides that she's going to stay. And Ruth decides that she will not leave Naomi. She refuses to stay behind. And she actually declares to Naomi one of the most famous passages in the Bible. It says, "Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried." And Ruth's loyalty wasn't just to Naomi, but she had changed her life and she had embraced Naomi's God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And this was kind of like a huge thing. She was a Moabite and she was leaving her culture. She left behind her religion and she is just leaving behind like her entire past. She's embracing an uncertain future and she's trusting in God that he's got this and he's going to show her the way if she has faith. And Ruth didn't try to change who she was. They got to Bethlehem. She's a widowed foreigner. She has no status whatsoever in Bethlehem. And she didn't try to hide that she was vulnerable or pretend to be someone else to fit in. But she learned how to be resilient, you know, self-reliant. She took care of Naomi and she trusted that God had a plan for her. And Naomi and Ruth arrived in Bethlehem at the start of the barley harvest. And this is like a huge thing. Everybody works the barley harvest. And they're poor and they're relying on God for provision. And so Ruth has embraced a role as a provider for Naomi. Naomi is older now, and so Ruth is taking care of her. And so she goes and she's going to help harvest the barley in the fields. And what happens is the poor people could go after the harvest, and they what's called they glean in the fields, and that's where they can go and they can gather the leftover grain that ends up, getting left behind for whatever reason. It falls off the cart or, gets kind of trampled, or it's just kind of a bad patch, so they leave it. So the poor in the town can go and they can gather up that grain. So Ruth goes to do this, and she ends up in the fields of a man named Boaz. And Boaz is very kind, and he's actually a relative of her father-in-law. And so, according to Jewish custom, he can actually marry Ruth. And so Boaz notices Ruth's hard work and her humility, and he had already heard of her loyalty to Naomi and her faith in God. And he was very moved by her character. And he told her that he would keep her safe, and he offered her protection. He gave her extra grain, and he said, "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." So here we have Ruth, who's just trying her best to do everything that God would have her do, and now Boaz has taken notice. And Ruth didn't need to chase a false image or compare herself to others to gain Boaz's respect. She just had to be herself and trust in her faith. And Naomi, she starts to see that God's hand is at work. And she advises Ruth to seek Boaz as a kinsman redeemer, which is what they call a relative who can marry a widow. And this preserves the family line and the inheritance. And this is Israelite custom. So Ruth, who is totally trusting in Naomi and trusting in God, follows her instructions, and she approaches Boaz humbly, and she asks him to spread the corner of his garment over her, which is a symbolic request to marry her and provide her protection. And Boaz was very honored by Ruth's request, and he praises her character over wealth or status. But he also tells her that there's a slight complication, potentially, because there is a re another relative that has a closer kinsman redeemer claim on Ruth. So Boaz is like a distant cousin. There's one that's closer, to the family. It's like first cousin, second cousin type thing. So there's actually another man who technically could step in and marry Ruth before Boaz. But he promises Ruth that he will figure it out and he'll get it taken care of because he feels like God is pointing them both in this direction. And so he does. He goes and he talks to this other man who has this closer claim, and he's just like, I don't want Ruth. I have no interest in marrying her, so you go on ahead." And so Boaz is given his blessing, and so he returns to Ruth, and they're able to be married, and he takes care of her. Ruth's courage wasn't about conforming to societal pressures or changing herself to be worthy. She acted in faith and she trusted in God's plan, and it all worked out the way it was supposed to. The Apostle Paul said that God has not given me the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Every single one of you are so incredibly smart. You have discernment, you have faith, you have love, and you have power. You can be the change that we need in this world. You can share your faith and your love with everyone you meet, and through your example and the way that you live your life, people will come to see your worth. You were saved for such a time as this. So be yourself, have faith in God, and know that everything's going to work out just the way it was meant to. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. Thank you so much for joining me. Go out and have a great day.